The recession is dead. Long live the recession.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, when we check in on business and the economy just as Wall Street is beginning its trading day. The government said something this morning it hasn't uttered in more than a year. The U.S. economy grew last quarter, and by more than expected. The question is, so what? We're going to answer that after we answer this. Where's Wall Street? The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are up about 0.7% this morning, with the Dow up 54 points. It's at 9,817. European markets have reversed their drop, and they're higher now by about 1%. Asian stocks didn't hear the news. They slid again today by another 2%. Now, for the morning's top story, let's say hello to Chief Economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, joining us live from Chicago. Morning, Diane.
Hi, really live. Sorry about the background noise. Yes, we had a positive GDP growth this quarter, almost half of which came from the Cash for Clunkers program and the bounce back in vehicle sales and production that we saw in the third quarter.
Yeah, so what happens when that stops, Diane?
Well, that's the real question. We will see some carryover strength into the fourth quarter. The real issue, though, is jobs. And we've seen small businesses in particular really hold back and hoard their cash because they're not getting access to the credit they once did, mostly through home equity lines of credit and consumer credit, to be able to feel comfortable to hire even if their businesses start kicking up.
Yes, Diane, as you say, it's about jobs, and 530,000 people filed a first-time unemployment claim last week. The government said that earlier this morning. Really, when is economic growth going to mean jobs?
You know, I think we will see some sort of trickle of jobs by December and January, but that is really the underlying word, trickle. It's going to be very hard to see major job gains. And for people out there to understand a benchmark, we need to see those unemployment claims drop to 450,000, almost 100,000 below where they are today, before we see actually any job generation out there. The only good news was that the number of people still on unemployment insurance actually dropped, which could mean some people are actually getting jobs, especially since we have extended unemployment insurance, so it's not just people falling off the side of the cliff.
Okay, Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
And until those jobs come back, Congress keeps on extending unemployment benefits that would otherwise run out. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman says lawmakers are looking at doing it again.
Under the Senate bill, unemployed workers would get up to 20 additional weeks of unemployment checks, and Congress would pay the $2.5 billion price tag by renewing a tax on employers. It amounts to $14 a year per worker, says Judy Conte of the National Employment Law Project.
It is not a new tax, and it is quite minimal considering the stimulative effect of all of these unemployment benefits going out to people who will immediately spend them on the necessities of life.
Employer groups aren't against more benefits. They just don't want to pay for them. State Chambers of Commerce sent a letter to the Senate that says funding the extension with an employer tax will stifle job growth. Norm Isatolo of Michigan's Unemployment Agency says another extension is worth the cost.
We estimate that about 100,000 jobless workers in the state who have exhausted their benefits will qualify.
And with Michigan's unemployment rate over 15%, those workers aren't likely to find another source of income anytime soon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Corporate news this morning, ExxonMobil profits dropped about 65% last quarter. Procter & Gamble sees a better sales outlook, though, for the rest of the year. And Nintendo says its profits were cut in half. Seems the Wii video game's not quite as hot now, as Marketplace's Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Nintendo's rivals have been closing in. Michael Gartenberg is with Interpret, a technology market research firm. He says Microsoft and Sony are adding all sorts of functions to their devices.
So, for example, Microsoft's Xbox now does things like Twitter. It does things like Netflix, so I can stream movies directly from that.
He says in a down economy, consumers are more likely to look at game consoles and ask what else they can do. He says Nintendo needs to gear up on the marketing front for the holidays, and it has to convince consumers the core gaming experience alone is worth paying for. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
You're listening to Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, October 29th at marketplace.org. ICANN is the California-based nonprofit corporation that acts as the world's clearinghouse for Internet domains and pathways. As Kurt Asian reports, ICANN is about to help the web speak the local language around the world.
Up until now, Internet users have had to type out web page URLs using the Roman alphabet. But on Friday, ICANN's board, meeting here in Seoul, is expected to change all that when it votes to introduce what's called internationalized domain names. Within a year or two, web users will be able to type out their favorite web addresses using Chinese characters, Korean Hangul, Arabic script, and so on.
The Internet is no longer dominated by English speakers anymore.
Rebecca McKinnon is a Hong Kong University professor specializing in Internet governance. She says about 1.5 billion people now use the Internet. Most are university graduates who are comfortable with the Roman alphabet. But the world's next online generation looks a little different.
Really, the next billion Internet users are increasingly going to be peasant farmers in far western China who maybe didn't graduate from grade school.
Friday's vote is expected to create a boom for companies that register domain names, as well as a lot of legal headaches in deciding who has the right to register certain addresses. In Seoul, I'm Kurt Asian for Marketplace.
The iPhone goes on sale in China beginning Friday. This is the world's biggest market for handsets. But what is life like for the people who manufacture the iPhone? Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from Shenzhen in southern China.
Designed in California, assembled in China. Those words are etched on the back of your iPhone. And on the China side of that equation is a migrant worker doing one task over and over. 30-something Mr. Liu injects hot plastic into molds all day. He makes the outer shells of the iPhone.
Each of us is like an ox. We never stop working. The factory is over 100 degrees. We go for 12 hours a day.
Now, Apple doesn't own the plant. It pays a company called Foxconn to make its products. The factory where Liu works holds 100,000 employees. Base pay here is 70 cents an hour, though with overtime he can make twice that. Still, get out of line here, and co-worker Wang says Foxconn docks your pay.
Foxconn punishes you for not finishing your food at the cafeteria. Waste it once, and you get a warning. But if you do it twice, they fine you.
Foxconn denied this in writing. The company does provide that food for free, as well as free dormitories. But Wang pays out of pocket to live off campus. He doesn't want to share a room with 30 other guys. And he wants to eat whatever he wants. Fried rice at this street vendor goes for 80 cents a bowl. But the biggest issue we heard from the workers is unfair compensation. Li Mingqi is in the industrial design department at the iPhone factory.
For instance, they stop paying overtime if you exceed 80 hours a week. No matter how much you work, they won't approve the extra pay.
Foxconn said this is not true. And for all the worker grievances, labor advocate Jeffrey Crothel says workers freely choose to do this because the money's good. Crothel is with the China Labor Bulletin.
The reason they go to the cities to look for work is because life in the countryside is even worse.
And even if they quit, plenty more Chinese are willing to come in and snap together an iPhone for that 70 cents an hour. In Shenzhen, southern China, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
You know, with all the talk about what's happening in the auto business these days, you can forget that the industry is more than GM and Toyota. The companies that make parts, everything from steering wheels to seats, are dependent on the car makers and vice versa. Just a few months ago, analysts were predicting a total collapse in the supply chain. That hasn't happened, but it is hardly a stable business right now, as Elisa Roth reports.
If you're in the car right now, take a look around. It's a good bet the inside was made by Johnson Controls. You may not recognize the name, but they're the world's biggest maker of car interiors, and yesterday they reported a big jump in third quarter profits. Other suppliers are reporting earnings in the next couple of days. Mark Gardner is in charge of the auto practice at Deloitte Consulting, and he's expecting good news.
The suppliers are holding their own, and I think it's evidence of the fact that they've been under some very aggressive campaigns and programs to consolidate and to collapse costs and to try to stick with the lower volumes that they've been seeing for the last year.
Gardner says the industry is shrinking, but slowly, and it could be a while before it finishes shaking out. Doug Harvey's in the auto division at A.T. Kearney.
There still is probably a significant amount of consolidation that we're going to see in the supply base because the overall industry is a smaller industry than it was.
That'll mean fewer, bigger suppliers, but probably a more stable industry overall. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The Anglo-Dutch oil giant Shell says third quarter profit dropped 62%, and the company says the outlook for the oil market is uncertain. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more from London.
Analysts had forecast a big drop in profits for Shell. Nevertheless, the stock market still found today's results disappointing because they failed to deliver the pleasant surprise served up by BP earlier this week. BP's figures were much better than expected. Nick McGregor is an oil analyst with brokers Redmayne Bentley. He says BP's a special case. It began cutting its costs much sooner than Shell.
All of the oil majors got fat in the good times and have started to try and trim down their cost base, and BP's at a much more advanced stage of that process.
Shell is trying to catch up, however. The company says it will have shed 5,000 jobs, 5% of the total workforce, by the end of this year. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
If you want a ticket to tonight's Game 2 of the World Series in the Bronx, it'll cost you some hundreds of dollars. Yet, if you watch a typical regular season game, you'll see giant patches of empty seats. A Texas company is marketing software to help teams sell tickets at the prices fans are willing to pay. Barry Kahn is the co-founder of QQ. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
What is the pricing problem that your software goes after?
Well, I think for years, and I guess probably forever, tickets haven't been accurately priced. You know, you've got times where tickets are going to be resold for 2, 3, 10 times face value. And then for every ticket that gets resold, you're looking at 4 tickets that never get sold. And a lot of that problem is because tickets are priced, you know, 9 to 12 months before a game.
So games shouldn't all cost the same amount.
No, I mean, the same reason that when you look at the schedule, you don't value every game the same. You choose to go to one game versus another. And, you know, we're helping the teams kind of reflect that in prices.
So the San Francisco Giants hired you last spring to handle the pricing for about 2,000 seats in their park. And what happened differently when you worked with them?
I mean, I think you saw a lot of games changing price that you wouldn't have expected at the beginning of the year. You know, great example being the Colorado Rockies. The Rockies aren't a big rival for the Giants. It's generally not a very popular opponent. But when you started looking down the stretch, the Rockies were leading the wild card. The Giants were a game or two behind. And that became a really popular series.
Barry Kahn is the founder of QQ. And Barry, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And finally, police say a Texas store clerk told a customer his lottery ticket was worth $2 and then took the ticket, which was actually worth $1 million, cashed it in and disappeared. The customer says the lottery commission should have been suspicious when one of its own agents claimed the prize. The commission so far has paid the buyer nothing. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.